We begin tonight in Ukraine. They have been trapped for months with no access to clean air or very much food or water. Residents of Mariupol hiding from the Russian bombardment in the basement of a massive steel plant. Today, for the first time, about 100 of them are free and promised safe passage. But the war around them rages on a day when Ukrainians traditionally remember the dead. Nick Schifrin has our report.
It is a difficult day in the best of times, the Sunday after Orthodox Easter, a day Ukrainians commemorate the dead. Today is the worst of times, and this is the worst of places. Irpin, synonymous with Russian war crimes, where not a single home on an entire city block has a roof. But it was here, outside Kyiv, the Russians were stopped. Now, next to Irpin's last generation of dead, so many new graves, the dead aren't even fully buried. And the grief is multi-generational, the parents who lost their son, the 10-year-old who wears the uniform of a father he'll never see again. His mother, Alla, helps him reconcile the irreconcilable.
Most of all, I'm thankful to those who bravely defended our city so that we would live.
And the wife, Tatiana, whose husband volunteered to fight.
Today, I bought flowers, which he always bought me. And now I bring them to him because these people have nothing better to do. And they send them here to kill our people, destroy our cities.
500 miles southeast, another destroyed city, Mariupol. For weeks, soldiers and civilians have been trapped by Russian shelling underneath the massive Azovstal steel plant with little food or water. Today, for the first time, Russia allowed about 100 to leave, and Russian TV broadcast this video of the Ukrainians they besieged evacuated by the busload. 37-year-old Natalia Usmanova, relieved to be alive, worked at the factory and spent 2 months underground with no access to fresh air.
The shelling was so strong, it kept hitting near us. At the exit of the bomb shelter on the top few steps, one could take a breath. But I was afraid to walk out and breathe some fresh air. I was afraid to even stick my nose out.
Tonight they will stay in tents in Russian-occupied territory. Tomorrow they've been promised safe passage to a Ukrainian-held city, President Volodymyr Zelensky said tonight.
Today we finally managed to start the evacuation of Azovstal. After weeks of negotiations, after many attempts, meetings, people, calls, countries, proposals, finally.
Earlier in Kyiv, Zelensky welcomed Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi and a delegation of Democrats. As Speaker, Pelosi's second in line to the presidency, making her the most senior American to visit since the invasion.
That we are on a frontier of freedom and that your fight is a fight for everyone. And so our commitment is to be there for you until the fight is done.
And Nick joins us now from Lviv. And Nick, we heard the House Speaker in your report use the phrase, until the war is done. Do the U.S. and Ukraine have different definitions of what winning this war looks like?
It's a key question, Jeff, and there is no one answer. At the very least, everybody wants Ukraine to evict Russia from the territory that they've seized since the February 25th invasion. So that's in southern and southeastern Ukraine. But Russia's controlled territory in the eastern Donbass since 2014. The question of victory, does that include evicting Russia from that territory? Zelensky will only say that officially he'll not cede any Ukrainian territory. But the British government this week said that their policy was to help Ukraine enough to be able to evict Russia from that territory in the Donbass. There's actually a policy debate within the U.S. administration about how far to go. All they will say for now is that their goal is to help Ukraine in some kind of negotiated settlement. And that means helping Ukraine with lots of weapons and a longer time as well, because now they're beginning to think of reducing Russia's ability to wage war even in the future. And that means from Moscow's perspective, this is going to increasingly be a U.S.-Russia proxy fight. And Jeff, the people I talk to believe that that means escalation is possible, because from Moscow's perspective, they would rather escalate than lose a proxy war.
Wow. So given all of that, what are U.S. officials telling you about the Russians' progress in Ukraine's east?
Yeah, very slow, but steady. That's what Ukrainian and Russian, that is what Ukrainian and U.S. officials are admitting. And if you take a look at the map, Russian forces are coming up from Mariupol. They're coming from the Donbass over to the west, and they're also coming from the north-south. Their goal is to push Ukrainian forces along that line in the Donbass and basically isolate them from the rest of the country. And that means that the U.S. is really trying to get weapons in as quickly as possible. And what the Ukrainians are doing are kind of rope-a-dope, as one official put it to me. They're ceding territory. They're letting Russia come in a little bit and to use a lot of weapons, a lot of manpower. And then Ukrainians, the next day or 2 days later, counterattack.
So, Nick, how is all of that affecting the ability to provide Ukraine with the arms that it's requesting?
Yeah, so the U.S. is rushing weapons like artillery, like surveillance, like radar systems that are crucial for this territory in the east, which has lots of wide open fields. And it's really a race against time for both sides, how quickly that U.S. weapons can arrive in eastern Ukraine. Russia is trying to rush in order to make progress before a lot of those weapons arrive in eastern Ukraine, even before they really reconstituted some of those forces that were decimated outside of Kyiv. And so Ukraine says that within a month or so, if they get these weapons, they could go on the counteroffensive. But, Jeff, Russia has a lot of men and a lot of weapons, and they could wage war in the east for a long time.
Nick Schifrin in Lviv for us tonight. Nick, thank you so much.
Thank you.